Hello, and welcome everyone to the first of many webinar sessions and panel discussions between LMAX Group and MacroHive. Today, we are going to be talking about millisecond reactions to economic events from data to alpha with LMAX Group. My name is Arun Sundaram. I head all market data commercial initiatives at LMAX Group. I'm joined here by my panelists from MacroHive, Bilal and Sam. Bilal, do you just want to give a brief introduction about MacroHive and your time there and about yourself?
Great, I will do. Thanks a lot, Arun. So my name is Bilal Hafiz, and I'm the CEO and head of research at MacroHive. MacroHive is an independent research and analytics company where we provide our research to the leading investors around the world. In terms of my background, before MacroHive, I used to run research at Nomura, the Japanese investment bank. And before that, I spent a long stretch at Deutsche Bank, where I ran various other research groups there, from foreign exchange to global multi-asset. And I started off working at JP Morgan in the late 1990s.
Sam, how about yourself?
Yes. So hi, I'm Sam Manishubrugan. I'm a quantitative macro research analyst at MacroHive. My background is mainly economics and applied econometrics. I have spent some time as an economist in government and work as a researcher in a think tank. And now I work as a quantitative researcher at MacroHive for the last 5 years.
Excellent. Thank you. So the webinar today presents some of the really unique and actionable insights that you can draw as clients based on the expertise of both LMAX Group and MacroHive. So let me start by giving a brief overview of LMAX and LMAX Group and the reason we are doing this with MacroHive. So LMAX operates institutional exchanges globally, and we facilitate trading on FX and crypto spot, index CFDs and commodities, and more recently, FX swaps with the acquisition of FX Hedgepool. We have multiple independent matching engines in London, New York, Tokyo, and Singapore. And from a data perspective, we have two pillars of what essentially makes LMAX uniquely positioned in this market. The first is firm liquidity. So here's where you have firm and executable price that comes out of the exchange, which means that the price that comes out of LMAX has no element of indication on it, or last look, as they call in the FX world. So it's a fully firm, executable price that you're seeing. The second axis is the focus on technology. So this is where we are able to generate updates of up to 1,000 updates a second, or a millisecond update in the pricing. So this unique combination of firm liquidity pricing and high frequency is where it is where we hope to put some perspective into the data that we have through the partnership with MacroHive. So Bilal, if I can start with you, you've been in the market for a long time, as you just mentioned. So can you just give us some insights on how investors have been have changed and how they look at the markets?
Absolutely. Great question there, Arun. One thing I would say is over the course of my 25-year career in finance, there's been a dramatic shift in terms of the quantitative aspect of people's processes. So people have become much more quantitative than before. And then secondly, people's time horizons have also shortened as well. Now, why is that? There's been two massive trends over the last 25 years. One has been the electronification of trading. So back when I started in the late 1990s, I would say something like 98 to 99% of trading was manually done in some way. There was almost no automation whatsoever. There was voice trading. You called somebody up, you then booked the trade then got done. What that then meant was if the market, if an investor received some new information, economic data or some other news, it would take time for that to percolate through into the market price, because they'd receive the insight, they'd decide what to do, then make a call, make the order, and then it would be minutes, maybe even hours, before the information will be reflected in markets. So what's changed in that relation is that you've seen electronification of essentially almost all of FX trading. So today, I would say something like 95% of FX trading is done electronically through algorithms, where there's an algorithm or a person just clicks a button and the trade gets done instantaneously. So that's one huge sort of difference. And that means speed of response is much, much quicker. The second big shift has been that with the explosion of the availability of data and compute powers increased, people in markets have increasingly used algorithms, quantitative techniques to execute trading strategies.
So everything's become a lot more efficient over the last 25 years. So whereas the market may take a few days to respond to some new information, today it occurs in seconds, if not milliseconds. And the clearest area in markets where you can see this is events. And what we define as events in markets are typically economic events. So non-farm payrolls, or NFP, is perhaps one of the biggest data points on the calendar. Essentially, when that data gets released, you see huge amounts of volume go through the market, and the market responds incredibly quickly. In the old days, it may take a few hours for the market to fully digest a new payrolls number. Today, it's seconds, if not milliseconds. And so if you're able to get hold of millisecond data, high quality millisecond data, you have an edge in terms of analyzing how markets respond to an event, but also knowing what to do when an event occurs. So should you act in the first few seconds, in the first few minutes? Does the effect last for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 1 hour or not? And at MacroHive, we've done an incredible amount of work on event analysis, as we call it. It's one of our most popular lines of research that we have. And thankfully, we've partnered with LMAX to receive your data, which in our view is incredibly high quality. It's firm prices, as you said, so it's not theoretical price. It's a price that was traded, and it goes down to the microsecond level. So we've been able to adapt our event analysis, which previously was done at the hourly level, down to the millisecond level. So now we're able to much better understand how markets evolve when you have an event, and how long the effect will persist for, to allow investors then to put an actionable trade on with this new rich area of data.
Excellent, thank you, Bilal. So from here, maybe I would like to bring in our senior economist from MacroHive, Dominique from the US, who can give some perspective on the non-farm payrolls just Bilal briefly touched upon.
Thank you, Arul. NFP is probably the most important piece of data for the Fed besides inflation for two reasons. First, the Fed mandate is stable prices and maximum employment. And second, in an economy as diverse as the US, the labor market is key to anything that happens, and of course, to the Fed managing its mandate. As you know, the Fed started to cut interest rates in September, and it's currently planning, or was planning, to cut in December. However, there is a bit of uncertainty on whether the Fed will be able to deliver this cut, which gives the next NFP extra importance. At the same time, there is a lot going on in the US economy at the moment that makes the NFP print unusually uncertain. So let me talk a bit about why the NFP is so important to the Fed. So on the slide you have in front of you, you have two charts. Let's look at the right-hand side chart, which is a chart of inflation. And what it shows basically is that inflation has stabilized. The measure of inflation the Fed likes to use is core inflation. That excludes the most volatile components, that are food and energy prices. That core inflation is the best indicator of trend. As you can see, over the past few months, it has stabilized. And since inflation remains above the Fed target of 2%, this stabilization actually suggests that if the Fed was just looking at inflation risk alone, it probably wouldn't cut in December. However, as I just mentioned, the mandate of the Fed is both inflation and maximum employment. So if this NFP print is low, actually there is a good chance that it could tip the Fed decision into cutting. So unusual importance of this NFP in terms of the Fed decision, and on top of that, unusual uncertainty in terms of the NFP print. Why? If you look at the chart on the left-hand side, which shows employment, so NFP, and unemployment, there is something which is a bit unusual. Typically, unemployment goes down when NFP goes up, right? It's fairly intuitive. Labor demand goes up. We get big NFP prints. There are fewer people unemployed. The unemployment rate goes down. And that's the relationship between the two variables we had before the pandemic. But after the pandemic, actually, what you can see is really two things. First of all, in 2022-23, NFPs have been much higher than before the pandemic, and unemployment has gone up. And this year, by contrast, unemployment has stabilized or gone down, while NFP have come down. So the correlation between the two has changed. Why? Because we've had a huge surge of illegal migrants in the US. It is a highly controversial topic politically. And as a result, the Fed has danced around the issue rather than address it squarely for its impact on inflation, wages, employment. So it's not well understood. And the result is that even though it's clear that if you have, you know, higher labor supply and if you have higher inflows of people who have difficulties fitting in because of language, because of low skills, they take longer to find jobs, so they lift up the unemployment rate. And so you have this change in the correlation between NFP and unemployment. It becomes positive. It's not well understood because the Fed has not talked much about it, and the media have not discussed this, not discussed it much either. So the result is that in 2022-2023, we've had a systematic forecast bias in that the consensus forecast have systematically overestimated NFP. And if you look at the forecast before the pandemic, over a period of time, over 12 months, say, there was zero. So there was no systematic bias. So post-pandemic, we had this systematic positive bias because of this immigration not being understood well and not being incorporated into the forecast. But now what's happened is that the government of the United States has basically tightened border control. And so the data shows significantly lower numbers of immigrants getting into the U.S. And this is only going to get tighter. As you know, we've just elected an anti-immigration administration. They are going to bring down even more the number of migrants coming into the U.S. And so what is happening is that with these fewer migrants, the NFP number is going to fall further. In H1, NFPs were about 200,000. In Q3, 150,000. In October, we don't really know because we had strikes, we had a hurricane. But if you take those into account, NFPs were probably about 60,000. So what is going on here, I think, is that with the end of the immigration surge, what's going to drive NFP is the demographics. The demographics don't look great. So NFP are going to continue to come down. At the same time, the market doesn't understand this very, very well. So we are likely to have a continued bias, but on the other side, with the market overestimating NFPs. And for instance, the forecast for this week is 200,000. I think we're more likely to have something close to 150,000. So all this structural change going on in the background, and that's not very well understood, it's adding uncertainty to the NFP number. And my expectation is that next week we will have a large negative surprise. So I'll stop here. I just wanted to stress one, this print that's coming up is unusually important, and two, there is unusual uncertainty around the print. Thank you. Back to you, Arun.
Great. Thank you, Dominique, for that. That was very helpful. Hopefully, I think what we'd really benefit from is having an update on non-farm payrolls after December 6th when it actually happens. So if you can have a follow-up recording from yourself, we can send it to all the clients as well. So at this point, I'd like to bring in Sam, who's worked extensively on the report together. And so Sam, what do you think? To start with, I think, why did you start with the FX market? Like, I'm, you know, MacroHive is multi-asset, so why did you focus on FX market?
Yeah, so as we know, foreign exchange markets are the largest and most liquid in the world. And so they can process information very quickly, just as Bilal was alluding to earlier. But I think I would argue more so than, say, equities, for example, FX markets really depend on macroeconomic news. You know, a lot of the medium-term determinants of exchange rates are determined by monetary policy, interest rate differentials, growth rate, relative growth rates. And so a lot of the macroeconomic news that comes out multiple times a month is related to that. So it's the earliest insight that can be gleaned into those medium-term fundamentals. And therefore, you know, what you have is a perfect mix of size, liquidity, and attention coming up to events. And therefore, you see price deviations happen very quickly. And some of the analysis which we've done at MacroHive, for example, you can see compared to, say, equities, the total price action that happens after an event, say 25% of that total price action within the first hour happens within the first minute. If we're talking FX markets, you know, 50% of the total price action over the next hour occurs within the first 30 seconds. And so you're having twice the level of price action within half the time. So, you know, the price deviations are very easy to see in FX markets.
Excellent, thank you for that. So now that you have mentioned about the FX markets, now the next question is, how do we get the relevant data in the FX markets? And I think that's where we had provided data, which is, I think we looked at the top of book aggregated millisecond updates of the data, the volumes aggregated by price. So go through the analysis, deep dive into the analysis, and just run through, you know, what you found in the analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the LMAX data is really unique. I mean, it offers us high quality insights that are very quick. What we've done is we've taken that data and we've looked. We've tried to focus on the millisecond by millisecond information, but put it in the context of what's happening going forward, because ultimately that's important. We're not just interested in how prices move immediately, but, you know, do they revert to, say, some mean? Where do they go in the long term? So it's important when placing trades in the short term that you have that context. So what we look at is time horizons at the 60-second interval to start off with, the 1 second interval thereafter, and then the 0.1 seconds after that.
So when you analyze these events, what further classification do you have of these events? Like, how do you categorize an upside, a downside? Like, what different classifications do you have on these events?
Yeah, so that's really important for us, is distinguishing between what is a consensus event or a non-consensus event, because that's where the price differentials matter most. So the data we have goes all the way back to October 2019, which is a considerable period of time. We focus, as Bilal mentioned, that there are three really big events. We have CPI, we have payrolls, and we have Fed announcements. So the key here is saying, what's a non-consensus event in these? So for CPI, it's very simple. What's an upside? What's a downside surprise in core month on month? For payrolls, which are released in thousands of jobs, we look at deviations in, one standard deviation difference between what is expected to what actually happens. For Fed meetings, what we've done is kind of utilize our in-house kind of macro hive experience. So Dominique, for example, she publishes Fed reviews every Fed meeting. And what's important there is not just the outcome of the Fed event, so whether it's hawkish or dovish, it's what's important is people's expectations relative to the hawkishness or dovishness. So an example there is the Fed might increase interest rates, which is hawkish, but it might be less than what people were expecting, which would be a dovish outcome. So that's kind of what we're alluding to. And so when we've categorized that, we in chart two in the document, you can see that we have roughly equal size buckets on the different outcomes, which is really helpful. And then what we do is we look at the pricing reactions to those different buckets. To get some really good statistical inferences, we run Monte Carlo simulations. So we run these responses over and over again to see what the likely outcomes are and the likely direction of prices over those time intervals.
Great. Thank you so much for that. Now, we're just curious to now know what the results show, which you've partly kind of explained.
Yeah.
But also, what about surprises when it's much more dovish than expected, much more hawkish than expected?
Absolutely.
Like, kind of throw some light on the surprises.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll spoil the surprise in saying that the punchline here is that we document substantial price deviations for all the currency pairs that we look at. What's really interesting is these substantial responses are predictable. So the things that we would expect. So if we look at chart 3D, for example, and we focus on the price and response to the euro dollar, when inflation or payrolls disappoint, the euro dollar moves higher. So that's on expectations of, say, lower growth prospects in the US or a lower federal funds rate in expectation. Or when we look at hawkish Fed meetings, the euro dollar moves lower on expectations of kind of a more responsive monetary authority to higher inflation. So what we're seeing is very substantial and predictable moves, but we're also seeing it at all the different time horizons that we're looking at. And that's what's really important here. So if you look at chart 4A, for example, again, sticking with the euro dollar here, just for simplicity, but the results hold for all of the currencies that we looked at. You'll see that, within the first minute already, 3/4 of the price action that happens over the next hour already happens within that minute. Then if we go to just the 2-second interval, 30% or 25% of that price action has already happened. So things are happening very quickly, but they're happening in a very predictable way. And that's what's really interesting.
I'm just curious, you mentioned 2 seconds, right? And that it's a bit intuitive. So how early can you get, given the granular data that LMAX has in offer, how early is early?
Very early. So, we looked at the sub 0.1 seconds. So we're talking, millisecond by millisecond. We've looked at 50 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, 150 milliseconds, 200 milliseconds. So, what we show, so for example, in chart 6A, again, sticking with the euro dollar, but this time maybe, looking at the reactions of hawkish Fed meetings, you can see in our simulations that there is a very clear drop already, on average at the 4-millisecond level, which is very quick. And also the simulations show that actually 75% of the time after hawkish Fed meetings, prices drop. So we're seeing something consistent, we're seeing something in line with what we're expecting, and we're seeing it very, very quickly. So what we tend to see is, the drop at 4 milliseconds, then it accelerates through to the 30 to 50 millisecond level, and then it kind of plateaus out. But it plateaus out around that two, or the rate at which it changes plateaus out after it reaches about 2 basis point decline after a hawkish Fed meeting. But just to put that in context, we're seeing something that's quite predictable to the 2 basis point level. And that's just, you know, 5% of the subsequent price move over the next hour. If we're looking at, you know, 30 to 40 basis point moves after hawkish Fed meetings, there's a lot of price action to still happen after we've seen this very short predictable move.
Excellent. And would you categorize this as something actionable that the clients can take in terms of signals or in terms of any kind of action that they can take on their portfolios based on these moves?
Definitely. So I think what is key here, and what is something that we've tried to get to, is to take it as a statistical approach, because ultimately, you know, we have 10 to 20 events in each of these buckets. And crucially, what we don't want is we don't want people to identify a price decline and then, you know, they're expecting a big decline in prices thereafter, and then they don't see it. It doesn't materialize. And it turns out that actually, you know, it's a relatively, you know, in line with consensus print. What we want is thresholds that people can see that they know with confidence prices will continue to decline thereafter. So what I've done in chart 6B, for example, is to point out those thresholds. So what we have, taking, for example, the 50 millisecond threshold, is that if prices decline by 3 basis points at that point of time, you know, 75% of occasions, it'll continue to decline thereafter. If when it does at that 3 basis point level, you're going to capture about 90% of the subsequent price decline. So there's a significant amount of price action to make the most out of once you hit these thresholds. And in our simulations, you know, that 3 basis point decline, it happens quite frequently. So it happens 40% of the time. So if you're putting that into, you know, the whole context here, you're talking 1 in every 8 Fed meetings, so once a year, you can almost with certainty see where prices are going to go at the 0.05 of a second level. So that's really interesting.
That's great. And it's great to get the insights from a price perspective. And as I mentioned before, I think the millisecond update on the price also came with the volumes, which are aggregated every millisecond. And there's a lot of interest and demand on, you know, how much of volumes have gone through and with particular currencies and stuff like that. So are there any insights that you have generated based on the volumes that have been traded?
Yeah. So where volumes are really interesting is you can see at what point the markets are able to kind of process the information that's come out of an event, I think. So what we do is we look at volumes in dovish and a hawkish context. And when you see a disparity between the two, that's really when you can get that first initial look at when markets are starting to process the unique information to that outcome. And what we show in chart 7D in the report is already within that 0.5 to 0.7 of a second interval, you know, markets are processing a hawkish Fed outcome. So that's very quick. And then that difference between the hawkish and Fed volumes continues for the next 5 seconds. So actually what that shows is it's really important to glean that information. It's really important to glean that information quickly to get the most out of the price action thereafter.
Excellent. Thank you, Sam, for those insights on both the prices and the volumes. Bilal, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll just impress on the audience is how original this research is. You know, there's been a lot of research that's been done in this area at the minute-by-minute level, and this is looking at things at the second and millisecond level. So this is really quite cutting-edge research. Then on top of that, you know, the initial research that Sam and the team have done is on certain currencies, like your dollar, for example. And so the question then is, what the next extensions of this? So we can start to look at this at many more currencies, emerging market currencies. We could look at other events as well. And what we could end up finding is that there's, say, events in emerging markets where the reactions are slower, and there may be perhaps more opportunities for traders to benefit from those effects. So this is really just the beginning. It's not the end of this journey that we're on here with this type of work. And it's incredibly exciting and very promising as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bilal. And thank you, Bilal. Thank you, Sam, for those insights. Thank you, Dominique, for those insights as well. So this report essentially hopefully helps trigger some ideas around how you can harness the transparency of the data that we have at LMAX Group and incorporate them into your trading strategies. Thank you all for listening in, and we are now moving on to the Q&A.
Great. So as briefly mentioned at the beginning, so you have the Q&A icon at the bottom. So just click on that and feel free to ask any questions. So we do have a few that have come up. So I think this might be a question to you, Sam. So what do you expect? Do you have a forecast for the upcoming non-farm payroll release? And what would that mean for prices based on the findings in the report?
Great question. Thanks, Rin. So we push out smart consensus forecasts ahead of CPI, PC, and payrolls events. We pushed out our payrolls forecast this morning, and it was coming in as an upside surprise, at least from a statistical point of view. I know Dominique has a different bottom-up perspective, which maybe she can touch on as well. The model itself has been doing pretty well. It's got a good track record. But if we were to see an upside surprise, what we'd do then is we'd expect to see large moves in the currencies that have historically moved quite a lot. And that's something that we do look at in quite a lot of depth at Macro Hive. So I'm just going to share my screen very quickly which is our monitor, which checks the different moves around payrolls events. And what we can see already in the currencies that are most affected by payrolls, three of the four currencies we cover in the report, the dollar yen, Aussie dollar, and the euro dollar, they have very large, historically large moves on payrolls events. So if we were to take, for example, the euro dollar here, we would expect a 20 basis point add-on, or roughly a 40% add-on on event days versus normal. So if we were to put that in terms of kind of implied vols for the upcoming release on Friday, we would expect historically a range of 0.7% in the euro dollar, something similar for the Aussie dollar, and maybe 1% for dollar yen. But actually what we do is we also look at market implied pricing for the upcoming event. And actually the market implied price range is 0.8 for euro dollar, 0.9 for the Aussie dollar, and 1.2 for dollar yen. So, you know, markets are pricing relatively large moves for this Friday. So it is a big event. And that would kind of go in line with our non-consensus print. And then if we were to go to the report, an upside surprise would be positive US growth signals. So that would be a downward move in the euro dollar or the Aussie dollar and an upward move in dollar yen. Given the greater attention on payrolls over the last couple of months, I would expect, you know, probably larger price moves than what we documented in the report. So perhaps, you know, 20 to 30 basis point moves in dollar yen within the first, you know, 60 seconds, and then probably most of that action within the 1 to 2 second range.
Thank you, Sam. There's a couple of questions on accessing the report. So definitely, I'll just summarize how you can do that. But essentially, if you've registered for the webinar, we'll have a follow-up email with the report as such. So that should be fine. Understandably, there's a lot of questions on non-farm payrolls, but let's toggle between other questions and maybe come back to non-farm payrolls. So there's one about FX being a crowded space in terms of data. You know, what's the special value of LMAX data that you've used on this report? Maybe I can take that, right? So the answer to that is essentially, as briefly mentioned in the video, it's firm liquidity, it's firm prices, executable prices, there's no element of indication of the prices. And secondly, the fact that you're connecting directly to the source, essentially. We are not a data aggregator. We don't take data from anywhere else. So you're kind of connecting directly to the source. So that gives you as realistic view as possible of the markets in terms of both volumes as well as the traded prices. And certainly the focus on the high frequency element of the data as well, that hugely increases the ability to, as Bilal mentioned, you know, traditionally we've done a lot of such reports, but I think it's the granularity of the millisecond updates and the granular data that LMAX has to offer that helps in this report. Back to non-farm payrolls, tricky one. So what's your hit ratio, Sam, on the forecasts? Maybe it's for Dominique as well. What's your take on non-farm payrolls? And maybe I'll combine that with another question, which is how representative is non-farm payrolls as a part of the broader trend? You know, we've had some differing numbers on GDP and non-farm payrolls. If you can throw some more light on that.
Okay, so shall I start? Obviously, there is a market within Macro Hive for this month's NFP. And as a firm, we have a philosophy that we don't have a house view. So my take is basically, if you look at demographic numbers, and there is a very solid study done by the CBO, one of the most respected economic agencies in the US. So they did a study before the pandemic, and they predicted that based on demographic trend, essentially the boomers retiring, by 2025, monthly NFPs would be 50,000 a month. Demographics projection don't change much. But so that projection was made in 2020. If anything, the demographics have gone worse because mortality rates are still above, even for prime age workers, are still above where they were before the pandemic. So that's the long term where we are headed. Now, after the CBO made that projection, we had the pandemic. And in the US, we've had a surge in immigration. We're talking about immigration, largely illegal migrants, increasing by 2.6, going to 2.6 in 2022, 3.3 million against 0.9 million in the 10 years before the pandemic on average, with enormous economic and political consequences. And one of the economic consequences, of course, to boost the NFP. And that's why we've had a combination of high NFP and rising unemployment. Now, what's happened is that this turned out politically unsustainable. And so the administration has tightened border controls. And as a result, the number of illegal migrants who have been entering the US has been coming down. And if you think long term, with the incoming administration, we're going to have even tighter border control. So over the next, say, 12 to 18 months, it's very likely that we are headed towards this 50K a month. The uncertainty is how fast we get there. If you look at the data on illegal migrants, we see a very marked decline since the middle of the year. Also, if you look at NFP, the average was about 200K in the first half of the year, 150K in the third quarter. And then October is a bit distorted because of strikes and hurricane. But if you factor those in, you are probably well below 100. So that's the basis of my prediction for 150K. So Sam, you have a much more quanti way of looking at things.
Yeah, definitely. So I'd add to that, that you know, the way we look at things, or sorry, the way I look at things in the model which I produce is a purely statistical one. So what we do is we look at the existing analysts that have put forecasts in, and we strip out their biases, and we aggregate that up to get a kind of a weighted average based on their performance. The hit rate's been good over the last year or so, with like 70% hit rate. But I have to say, Dominique's always given us a run for our money on this side. And so actually, I think the fact that we have two very different views is probably characteristic of, you know, a lot of uncertainty going into the print, and also why the market is pricing large moves for this Friday.
Thanks, Sam. Dominique, that was good. I'll probably take one final question. I think this one is more of a comment on the low non-farm payrolls, which would be a disaster for the US. So the last question, maybe one on the data side, is the ability to access the data at such level of granularity. Yeah, so I think you know, we offer data through the standard connectivity methods, REST API, Fix API, the standard ones, and this you know, there are different ways by which you can, based on the use case. For more front office, it tends to be Fix API. For back to middle office use cases, it tends to they're a bit more open to different ways of taking in the data based on the conflation, the frequency of the data that you would need. We can discuss all that, but we essentially LMAX is able to offer the data to across the spectrum of clients, right? Not just purely institutional, not just purely retail, and everywhere in between. So we're able to offer the data to across the spectrum of clients. So that's kind of the answer to that. So I mean, this is a lot to take in, right? So we have the, as briefly mentioned before, we will send the full report to all the participants of the webinar. This is the first of the many webinar CDs that we're doing together, LMAX Data and Macro Hive together on the economic side. So any other themes that you would like us to touch on, feel free to reach out to us. We have all the contact information and the follow-up emails that we would be sending you. Of course, any questions that we were not able to answer in this time, feel free to personally connect with either myself or with Sam or with Dominique as well. And so you have all the contact information. I think that is all we have for today. Thank you again, Sam, Bilal, and Dominique, for your time and for your insights. So we will be ending the webinar now. Thank you.
Thank you.